I called Rich Dad, ready to begin my lessons again. Rich Dad had turned the businesses over to Mike and was now semi-retired. He was looking for something to do rather than play golf all day. While Mike was busy running their empire, Rich Dad and I had lunch at a hotel on Waikiki Beach. The sun was warm, the ocean beautiful, the breeze light, and the setting as close to paradise as you can get. Rich Dad was shocked to see me walk in wearing my uniform. He had never seen me in uniform before. He had only seen me as a kid, dressed in casual clothes like shorts, jeans, and t-shirts. I guess he finally realized that I had grown up since leaving high school and had seen a lot of the world and fought in a war. I wore my uniform to the meeting because I was between flights and had to get back to the base to fly that evening. "So, that is what you have been doing since leaving high school," said Rich Dad. I nodded my head and said, 4 years at the military academy in New York and 4 years in the Marine Corps. One more year to go." "I am very proud of you," said Rich Dad. "Thanks," I replied, "but it will be nice to get out of a military uniform. It's really tough being spit on or stared at or called baby killers by all these hippies and people who are against the war. I just hope it ends soon for all of us." "I'm glad Mike did not have to go," said Rich Dad. "He wanted to enlist, but his poor health kept him out." "He was fortunate," I replied. "I lost enough friends to that war. I would have hated to have lost Mike, too." Rich Dad nodded his head and asked, "So what are your plans once your military contract is up next year?" "Well, three of my friends have been offered jobs with the airlines as pilots. It's tough getting hired right now, but they say they can get me in through some contacts they have." "So you're thinking of flying with the airlines?" asked Rich Dad. I nodded slowly. "Well, that's all I've been doing, thinking about it. The pay is okay, and benefits are good. And besides, my flight training has been pretty intense," I said. "I've become a pretty good pilot after flying in combat. If I fly for a year with a small airline and get some multi-engine time, I will be ready for the major carriers." "So is that what you think you were going to do?" asked Rich Dad. "No," I replied. "Not after what has happened to my dad and after having lunch with you two yesterday at Mike's house. I lay awake for hours last night, and I thought about what you said about investing. I realized that if I took a job with the airlines, I might someday become an accredited investor. But I realized that I might never go beyond that level." Rich Dad sat in silence, nodding ever so slightly. "So what I said hit home," he said in a low voice. "Very much so," I replied. "I reflected on all the lessons you gave me as a kid. Now I am an adult and the lessons have a new meaning to me." "And what did you remember?" asked Rich Dad. "I remember your taking away my 10 cents per hour and making me work for free," I replied. "I remember that lesson of not becoming addicted to a paycheck." Rich Dad laughed at himself and said, "That was a pretty tough lesson." "Yes, it was," I replied, "but a great lesson. My dad was really angry with you then, but now he is the one trying to live without a paycheck at 52 years old. I was only 9 when I got that lesson. After lunch at Mike's yesterday, I vowed that I would not spend my life clinging to job security just because I need a paycheck. That is why I doubt that I will seek a job with the airlines, and that is why I'm here having lunch with you. I want to review your lessons on how to have money work for me so I don't have to spend my life working for money. But this time, I want your lessons as an adult. Make the lessons harder and give me more detail." "And what was my first lesson?" asked Rich Dad. "The rich don't work for money," I said promptly. "They know how to have money work for them." A broad smile came over Rich Dad's face. He knew that I had been listening to him all those years as a kid. "Very good," he said, "and that is the basis of becoming an investor. All investors learn how to have their money work hard for them." "And that is what I want to learn," I said quietly. "I want to learn and maybe teach my dad what you know. He is in a very bad way right now, trying to start over again at the age of 52. I know, said Rich Dad. I know. So, on a sunny day, with surfers riding the beautiful waves of the deep blue ocean, my lessons on investing began. The lessons came in five phases, each phase taking me to a higher level of understanding Rich Dad's thought process and his investment plan. The lessons began with preparing mentally and taking control of myself, because that is the only place that investing really takes place anyway. Investing ultimately begins and ends with taking control of yourself. The lessons on investment in phase one of Rich Dad's investment plan are all about the mental preparation it takes before actually beginning to invest. Lying in my bunk that night in 1973 in a dingy room on the Marine Corps base, my mental preparation had begun. Mike was fortunate enough to have a father who had accumulated great wealth. I was not that fortunate. In many ways, he had a 50-year head start on me. I had yet to start. That night, I began my mental preparation by choosing between seeking job security, the road my poor dad chose, and pouring a foundation of real wealth, the road my rich dad chose. That is where the process of investing truly begins and where Rich Dad's lessons on investing start. It starts with a very personal decision, a mental choice to be rich, poor, or middle class. It is an important decision because whichever financial position in life you choose, be it rich, poor, or middle class, everything in your life then changes. Chapter 3. Investor Lesson Number 3. The Choice. Rich Dad's lessons on investing began. When it comes to money and investing, people have three fundamental reasons or choices for investing. To be 1. Secure, 2. Comfortable, or 3. Rich. Rich Dad continued, all three choices are important. The difference in one's life occurs when the choices are prioritized. He continued by saying that most people make their money and investment choices in that exact order. In other words, their first choice when it comes to money decisions is security. Second is comfort. And third is to be rich. That is why most people make job security their highest priority. After they have a secure job or profession, then they focus on comfort. The last choice for most people is to be rich. That day in 1973, Rich Dad said, most people dream of becoming rich, but it is not their first choice. Only 3 out of 100 people in America are rich because of this priority of choices. For most people, if becoming rich disturbs their comfort or makes them feel insecure, they will forsake becoming rich. That is why so many people want that one hot investment tip. People who make security and comfort their first and second choices look for ways to get rich quick that are easy, risk-free, and comfortable. A few people do get rich on one lucky investment, but all too often, they lose it all. Rich or happy? I often hear people say, I'd rather be happy than be rich. That comment has always sounded very strange to me. I have been both rich and poor, and in both financial positions, I have been both happy and unhappy. I wonder why people think they have to choose between happiness and being rich. When I reflect upon this lesson, it occurs to me that what people are really saying is that I'd rather feel secure and comfortable than be rich. That is because when they are insecure or uncomfortable, they are not happy. For me, I was willing to feel insecure and uncomfortable in order to be rich. I have been rich and poor as well as happy and unhappy, but I assure you that when I was poor and unhappy, I was much unhappier than when I was rich and unhappy. I have also never understood the statement, money does not make you happy. While there is some truth in it, I have always noticed that when I have money, I feel pretty good. The other day, I found a $10 bill in my jeans pocket. Even though it was only $10, it felt great finding it. receiving money has always felt better than receiving a bill for money I owe. At least that is my experience with money. I feel happy when it comes in and sad when it leaves. Back in 1973, I put my priorities in this order: to be 1. Rich, 2. Comfortable, 3. Secure. As stated earlier, when it comes to money and investing, all three priorities are important. Which order you put them in is a very personal decision that should be made before beginning to invest. My poor dad put to be secure as priority 1, and rich dad put to be rich as priority 1. Before beginning to invest, it is important to decide what your priorities are. Mental attitude quiz. To be rich, comfortable, and secure are personal core values. One is not better than the other. I do know, however, that making the choice of which core values are most important to you often has a significant long-term impact upon the kind of life you choose. That is why it is important to know which core values are most important to you, especially when it comes to the subject of money and financial planning. So the mental attitude question is, what are your core values? List in order of importance which core values are most important to you. Some of you may need to work through your true feelings. Talk seriously with your spouse or mentor. Make pro and con lists. Knowing what your personal priorities are will save you many agonizing decisions and sleepless nights later. One of the reasons the 90-10 rule of money applies may be because 90% of the people choose comfort and security over being rich. Chapter 4. Investor Lesson Number 4. What kind of world do you see? One of the most startling differences between my rich dad and poor dad was the kind of world they saw. My poor dad always saw a world of financial scarcity. That view was reflected when he said, "Do you think money grows on trees?" or "Do you think I'm made of money?" or "I can't afford it." When I spent time with my rich dad, I began to realize that he saw a completely different world. He would see a world of too much money. That view was reflected when he said, "Don't worry about money. If we do the right things, there will always be plenty of money. Don't let not having money be an excuse for not getting what you want." In 1973, during one of Rich Dad's lessons, he said, "There are only two kinds of money problems. One problem is not enough money. The other problem is too much money. Which type of money problem do you want?" In my classes on investing, I spend a lot of time on this subject. Most people come from families where the money problem was not enough money. Since money is only an idea, if your idea is that there is not enough money, then that is what your reality will be. One of the advantages I had, coming from two families, was that I could see both types of problems. And rest assured, both are problems. My poor dad always had problems of not enough money, and my rich dad always had problems of too much money. Rich Dad had a comment on that strange phenomenon. He said, "People who suddenly become rich by things such as inheritance, a big jackpot from Las Vegas, or the lottery, suddenly become poor again because, psychologically, all they know is a world of not enough money. So they lose all their suddenly found wealth and go back to the only world of money they know, a world of not enough money." One of my personal struggles was shaking the idea that the world was a world of not enough money. From 1973 on, Rich Dad had me become very aware of my thoughts when it came to the subjects of money, working, and becoming rich. Rich Dad truly believed that poor people remained poor simply because that was the only world they knew. Rich Dad would say, "Whatever your reality is about money inside of you is the reality of money outside of you. You cannot change your outside reality until you first change your inside reality about money." Rich Dad connected what he saw as some of the causes of scarcity to the effect it has on people's attitudes. The more security you need, the more scarcity there is in your life. The more competitive you are, the more scarcity there is in your life. That is why people compete for jobs and promotions at work and compete for grades in school. People who are creative, cooperative, and have good financial and business skills often have lives of increasing financial abundance. I could see these differences in attitudes between my two dads. My real dad always encouraged me to play it safe and seek security. My rich dad encouraged me to develop skills and be creative. The second half of this audiobook is about how to take your creative ideas and create a world of abundance rather than a world of scarcity. During our discussions about scarcity, Rich Dad would take a coin out of his pocket and say, "When a person says, 'I can't afford it,' that person sees only one side of the coin. The moment you say, 'How can I afford it?' you begin to see the other side. The problem is that even when people see the other side, they see it with only their eyes. That is why poor people see rich people doing what rich people do on the surface, but they fail to see what rich people are doing inside their minds. If you want to see the other side of the coin, you have to see what is going on inside a very rich person's mind. The second half of this audiobook is about what goes on in a rich person's mind." I asked Rich Dad why lottery winners usually go broke. His reply was, "A person who suddenly comes into a lot of money and goes broke because they still only see one side of the coin. In other words, they handle the money in the same way they always did, which is the reason they were poor or struggled in the first place. They see only a world of not enough money. The safest thing that person can do is just put money in the bank and live off the interest only. People who can see the other side of the coin would take that money and multiply it rapidly and safely. They can do that because they see the other side of the coin where there is a world of too much money. They use their money to get to the other side faster while everyone else uses money to become poorer faster." In the late 1980s, after Rich Dad retired completely and turned his empire over to Mike, he called me in for a brief meeting. Before the meeting began, he showed me a bank statement with $39 million in cash and said, "And this is only in one bank. I am retired now because it is a full-time job to keep taking this cash out of my banks and moving it into more productive investments. I repeat, it is a full-time job that becomes more challenging every year." As the meeting ended, Rich Dad said, "I spent years training Mike to build the engine that produces this much money. Now that I am retired, he is running the engine that I built. The reason I can retire with confidence is because Mike knows not only how to run the engine, but how to fix it if it breaks." Most rich kids lose their parents' money because, although they grow up in extreme wealth, they never really learn how to build an engine or fix it after it is broken. In fact, too many rich kids are the very people who break the engine. They grow up on the rich side of the coin, but they never learn what it takes to get to that side. You have a chance, with my guidance, to make the transition and stay on the other side. A big part of taking control of myself was taking control of my internal reality about money. I have had to constantly remind myself that there is a world of too much money because in my heart and soul, I have often felt like a poor person. One of the exercises Rich Dad had me do whenever I felt the surge of panic in my heart and stomach, the panic that comes from the fear of not having enough money, was to simply say, "There are two kinds of money problems. One problem is not enough money, and the other is too much money. Which one do I want?" I would ask this question mentally, even though my core being was in a state of financial panic. I am not one of these wishful thinking people or a person who believes solely in the power of affirmation. I asked myself that question to combat my inherited point of view on money. Once my gut was calmed down, I would then ask my mind to begin finding solutions to whatever was financially challenging me at the time. Solutions could mean seeking new answers, finding new advisors, or attending a class on a subject I was weak on. The main purpose for combating my core panic was to allow me to calm down so I could move forward again. I have noticed that most people let their panic about money defeat them and dictate the terms and conditions of their lives. Hence, they remain terrified about risk and money. As I wrote in Cash Flow Quadrant, people's emotions often run their lives. Emotions such as fear and doubt lead to low self-esteem and a lack of self-confidence. In the early 1990s, Donald Trump was nearly $1 billion in debt personally and $9 billion in debt corporately. An interviewer asked him if he was worried. He replied, "Worrying is a waste of time. Worrying gets in my way of working to solve these problems. I have noticed that one of the main reasons people are not rich is that they worry too much about things that might never happen." Rich Dad's investor lesson number two was to mentally choose to see both worlds, a world of not enough money and a world of too much money. Later, Rich Dad went into the importance of a financial plan. Rich Dad strongly believed in having a financial plan for when you did not have enough money, as well as a financial plan for when you will have too much money. He said, "If you do not have a plan for having too much money, then you will lose all your money and go back to the only plan you know, which is what 90% of the population knows, a world of not enough money." Security and scarcity. Rich Dad said, the more a person seeks security, the more scarcity they will have in their life. Security and scarcity go hand in hand. That is why people who seek job security or guarantees are often the people with less abundance in their life. One of the reasons the 90-10 rule of money holds true is that most people spend their lives seeking more security instead of seeking more financial skills. The more financial skills you have, the more abundance you will have in your life. It was these financial skills that gave Rich Dad the power to begin acquiring some of the most valuable real estate in Hawaii, even though he had very little money. These same financial skills give people the power to take an opportunity and turn it into millions of dollars. Most people can see opportunities. They just cannot turn that opportunity into money. That is why they often seek even more security. Rich Dad also said, the more a person seeks security, the less they can see of the opportunities that abound. They see only one side of the coin and never see the other side. That is why the more they seek security, the less opportunity they see on the flip side of the coin. As the great baseball player Yogi Berra once said, strike out just 7 out of 10 times and you're in the Hall of Fame. In other words, if he came to bat 1,000 times in his baseball career, and if he struck out only 700 times, he would be in the Hall of Fame. After reading Yogi Berra's quote, Rich Dad said, most people are so security conscious that they live their entire lives avoiding striking out just once. Mental attitude quiz. I came from a family that saw the world as a world of not enough money. My personal challenge was to repeatedly remind myself that another kind of world existed, a world of too much money, and that I needed to keep an open mind to see a world of both possibilities for me. So the mental attitude questions are, 1. Can you see that two different worlds of money can exist, a world of not enough money and a world of too much money? 2. If you currently live in a world of not enough money, are you willing to see the possibility of your living in a world of too much money? Chapter 5. Investor Lesson Number 5. Why Investing is Confusing. One day, I was waiting in Rich Dad's office, and he was speaking on the phone. He was saying things such as, so you're long today? If the prime drops, what will that do to the spread? Okay. Now I understand why you're buying an option straddle to cover that position. You're going to short that stock? Why not use a put option instead of a short? After Rich Dad put his phone down, I said, I have no idea what you were talking about. Investing seems so confusing. Rich Dad smiled and said, What I was talking about was not really investing. It wasn't investing? Then what was it? It sounded like what investors on TV and in the movies sound like. Rich Dad smiled and laughed, saying, First of all, investing means different things to different people. That is why it seems so confusing. What most people call investing is not really investing. People are all talking about different things, yet they often think they are talking about the same thing. What? I said, screwing up my face. People are talking about different things, yet think they are talking about the same thing? Again, Rich Dad laughed. The lesson had begun. Investing means different things to different people. As Rich Dad began the lesson that day, he repeatedly stressed that main point. Investing means different things to different people. The following are some of the highlights of this important lesson. Different people invest in different things. Rich Dad explained some of the differences in value. Some people invest in large families. A large extended family is a way to ensure care for the parents in their old age. People invest in a good education, job security, and benefits. The individual and his or her marketable skills become the assets. Some people invest in external assets. In America, about 45% of the population owns shares in companies. This number is growing as people realize that job security and lifetime employment are no longer guaranteed. There are many different investment products. Here is a sample of some of the different types of investments. Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, real estate, insurance, commodities, savings, collectibles, precious metals, hedge funds, and others. Each one of these groups can then be broken down into different subgroups. Let's take stocks, for example. Stocks can be subdivided into common stock, preferred stock, stocks with warrants, small cap stock, blue chip stock, convertible stock, technical stock, industrial stock, and on and on and on. Real estate can be subdivided into single family, commercial office, commercial retail, multifamily, warehouse, industrial, raw land to the curb, and on and on and on. Insurance can be subdivided into whole, term, variable life, universal, variable universal, blended, whole and term in one policy, first, second, or last to die, used for funding buy-sell agreement, used for executive bonus and deferred compensation, used for funding estate taxes, used for non-qualified retirement benefits, and on and on and on. There are many different investment products, each designed to do something different. That is another reason why the subject of investing is so confusing. There are different investment procedures. Rich Dad used the word procedure to describe the technique, method, or formula for buying, selling, trading, or holding these investment products. The following are some of the different types of investment procedures. Buy, hold, and pray, long. Buy and sell, trade. Sell, then buy, short. Option buying and selling, trade. Dollar cost averaging, long. Brokering, trade no position. Saving, collecting. Many investors are classified by their investing procedures and their products. For example, I am a stock trader. I speculate in real estate. I collect rare coins. I trade commodity future options. I am a day trader. I believe in money in the bank. All of this adds to the confusion on the subject of investing because, under the banner of investing, there are people who are really gamblers, speculators, traders, savers, dreamers, losers. Many of these individuals call themselves investors, and technically they are, which is why the subject of investing is even more confusing. No one is an expert at everything. Rich Dad said investing means different things to different people. Rich Dad also said there is no one person who can possibly be an expert at the entire subject. Everyone has a bias. A person who is good at stocks will say, stocks are your best investment. A person who loves real estate will say, real estate is the basis of all wealth. Someone who hates gold will say, gold is an obsolete commodity. When you add procedure bias, you can really get confused. Some people say, diversify, don't put all your eggs in one basket. There are others, such as Warren Buffett, America's greatest investor, who says, don't diversify, put all your eggs in one basket and watch that basket closely. All of this personal bias from so-called experts adds to the confusion that shrouds the subject of investing. Same market, different directions. Adding to the confusion is that everyone has a different opinion on the direction of the market and the future of the world. If you watch the financial news stations, they will have one so-called expert who says, the market is overheated. It will crash in the next 6 weeks. 10 minutes later, another expert will come on and say, the market is set to go up even further. There will be no crash. Late to the party. A friend of mine recently asked, every time I hear of a hot stock, by the time I buy it, the stock is heading down. I buy at the top because it's the hot popular stock, and then a day later it starts heading down. Why am I always late to the party? Another complaint I often hear is, the stock drops in price, so I sell it, and the next day it goes up. Why does that happen? I call this the late to the party phenomenon, or the you sold too early phenomenon. The problem with investing in something because it's popular or rated as the number one fund for the past 2 years is that real investors have already made their money in that investment. They were in it early and got out at the top. For me, nothing is more frustrating than to hear someone say, I bought it at $2 a share and it's now at $35 a share. Such stories or hot tips do me no good and only frustrate me. That is why today, when I hear such tales of instant wealth and fast money in the market, I just walk away and choose not to listen, because such stories are not really stories about investing. This is why investing is confusing. Rich Dad often said, investing is confusing because it is a very large subject. If you look around you, you'll see that people have invested in many different things. Look at your appliances. Those are all products from companies that people invested in. You receive your electricity from a utility company that people invest in. Once you understand that, then look at your car, the gas, the tires, seat belts, windshield wipers, spark plugs, the roads, the stripes on the road, your soft drinks, the furniture in your house, the shopping center your favorite store is in, the office buildings, the bank, the hotels, the airplane overhead, the carpet in the airport, and so on. All of these things are there because someone invested in the business that delivers you the things that make life civilized. That is what investing really is all about. Rich Dad often ended his lessons on investing with this statement. Investing is such a confusing subject for most people because what most people call investing is not really investing. In the next chapter, Rich Dad guides me into reducing the confusion and into understanding what investing really is. Mental Attitude Quiz. Investing is a vast subject with many different people having as many different opinions. So, the mental attitude questions are, 1. Do you realize that investing means different things to different people? 2. Do you realize that no one person can know all there is to know about the subject of investing? 3. Do you realize that one person may say an investment is good and another person may say the same investment is bad and that both could have valid points. 4. Are you willing to keep an open mind to the subject of investing and listen to different points of view on the subject? 5. Are you now aware that focusing on specific products and procedures may not necessarily be investing? 6. Do you realize that an investment product that is good for one person may not be good for you? Chapter 6. Investor Lesson Number 6. Investing is a plan, not a product or procedure. I am often asked questions like, I have $10,000 to invest. What do you recommend I invest in? And my standard reply is, do you have a plan? A few months ago, I was on a radio station in San Francisco. The program was on investing and was hosted by a very popular local stockbroker. A call came in from a listener wanting some investment advice. I am 42 years old. I have a good job, but I have no money. My mother has a house with a lot of equity in it. Her home is worth about $800,000, and she owes only $100,000 on it. She said she would let me borrow some of the equity so I could begin investing. What do you think I should invest in? Should it be stocks or real estate? Again, my reply was, do you have a plan? I don't need a plan, was the reply. I just want you to tell me what to invest in. I want to know if you think the real estate market is better or the stock market. I know that is what you want to know, but do you have a plan? I again asked as politely as possible. I told you, I don't need a plan, said the caller. I told you my mother will give me the money, so I have the money. That's why I don't need a plan. I'm ready to invest. I just want to know which market you think is better, the stock market or the real estate market. I also want to know how much of my mom's money I should spend on my own home. Prices are going up so fast here in the Bay Area that I don't want to wait any longer. Deciding to use another approach, I asked, if you're 42 years old and have a good job, why is it that you have no money? And if you lose your mother's equity money from her home, can she continue to afford the home with the added debt? And if you lose your job or the market crashes, can you continue to afford a new house if you can't sell it for what you paid for it? To an estimated 400,000 listeners came his answer. That is none of your business. I thought you were an investor. You don't need to dig into my private life to give me tips on investing, and leave my mother out of this. All I want is investment advice, not personal advice. Investment advice is personal advice. One of the most important lessons I learned from my rich dad was this. Investing is a plan, not a product or procedure. He went on to say investing is a very personal plan. During one of my lessons on investing, he asked, "Do you know why there are so many different types of cars and trucks?" I thought about the question for a while, finally replying, "I guess because there are so many different types of people, and people have different needs. A single person may not need a large 9-passenger station wagon, but a family with 5 kids would need one. And a farmer would rather have a pickup truck than a 2-seater sports car." "That's correct," said Rich Dad, "and that is why investment products are often called investment vehicles." "They're called vehicles?" I repeated. "Why investment vehicles?" "Because that is all they are," said Rich Dad. "There are many different investment products or vehicles because there are many different people with many different needs, just as a family with 5 children has different needs than a single person or a farmer." "But why the word vehicles?" I asked again. "Because all a vehicle does is get you from point A to point B," said Rich Dad. "An investment product or vehicle simply takes you from where you are financially to where you want to be sometime in the future financially." "And that is why investing is a plan," I said, nodding my head quietly. I was beginning to understand. Investing is like planning a trip, let's say, from Hawaii to New York. Obviously, you know that for the first leg of your trip, a bicycle or car will not do. That means you will need a boat or a plane to get across the ocean, said Rich Dad. And once I reach land, I can walk, ride a bike, travel by car, train, or bus to New York, I added. All are different vehicles. Rich Dad nodded his head, and one is not necessarily better than the other. If you have a lot of time and really want to see the country, then walking or riding a bike would be the best. Not only that, you will be much healthier at the end of the trip. But if you need to be in New York tomorrow, then obviously flying from Hawaii to New York is your best and only choice if you want to make it on time. Many people focus on a product, such as stocks, and then a procedure, such as trading, but they don't really have a plan. Is that what you were saying? I asked. Rich Dad nodded. Most people are trying to make money by what they think is investing, but trading is not investing. What is it if it is not investing? I asked. It's trading, said Rich Dad, and trading is a procedure or technique. A person trading stocks is not much different than a person who buys a house, fixes it up, and sells it for a higher profit. One trades stocks, the other trades real estate. It's still trading. In reality, trading is centuries old. Camels carried exotic wares across the desert to consumers in Europe, so a retailer is also a trader in a sense. And trading is a profession, but it is not what I call investing. And to you, investing is a plan to get you from where you are to where you want to be, I said, doing my best to understand Rich Dad's distinctions. Rich Dad nodded and said, I know it's picky and seems a minor detail, yet I want to do my best to reduce the confusion around this subject of investing. Every day I meet people who think they're investing, but financially they're going nowhere. They might as well be pushing a wheelbarrow in a circle. It takes more than one vehicle. In the previous chapter, I listed a few of the different types of investment products and procedures available. More are being created every day because so many people have so many different needs. When people are not clear on their own personal financial plans, all these different products and procedures become overwhelming and confusing. Rich Dad used the wheelbarrow as his vehicle of choice when describing many investors. Too many so-called investors get attached to one investment product and one investment procedure. For example, a person may invest only in stocks or a person may invest only in real estate. The person becomes attached to the vehicle and then fails to see all the other investment vehicles and procedures available. The person becomes an expert at that one wheelbarrow and pushes it in a circle forever. One day, when he was laughing about investors and their wheelbarrows, I had to ask for further clarification. His response was, some people become experts at one type of product and one procedure. That is what I mean by becoming attached to the wheelbarrow. The wheelbarrow works. It hauls a lot of cash around, but it is still a wheelbarrow. A true investor does not become attached to the vehicles or the procedures. A true investor has a plan and has multiple options for different investment vehicles and procedures. All a true investor wants to do is get from point A to point B safely and within a desired time frame. That person doesn't want to own or push the wheelbarrow. Still confused, I asked for greater clarification. Look, he said, becoming a little frustrated, if I want to go from Hawaii to New York, I have a choice of many vehicles. I don't really want to own them. I just want to use them. When I get on a plane, I don't want to fly it. I don't want to fall in love with it. I just want to get from where I am to where I am going. When I land at the airport, I want to use the taxi to get from the airport to my hotel. Once I arrive at the hotel, the porter uses a handcart to move my bags from the curb to the room. I don't want to own or push that handcart. So what is the difference? I asked. Many people who think they are investors get attached to the investment vehicle. They think they have to like stocks or like real estate to use them as investment vehicles. So they look for investments they like and fail to put together a plan. These are the investors who wind up traveling in circles, never getting from financial point A to financial point B. So you don't necessarily fall in love with the plane you fly on, just as you don't necessarily fall in love with your stocks, bonds, or office buildings. They are all simply vehicles, I stated, vehicles to take you to where you want to go. Rich Dad nodded. I appreciate those vehicles. I trust that people take care of those vehicles. I just don't get attached to the vehicles, nor do I necessarily want to own or spend my time driving them. What happens when people get attached to their investment vehicles, I asked. They think that their investment vehicle is the only vehicle, or that it is the best vehicle. I know people who invest only in stocks as well as people who invest only in real estate. That is what I mean by getting attached to the wheelbarrow. There is not anything necessarily wrong with that type of thinking. It's just that they often focus on the vehicle rather than their plan. So even though they may make a lot of money buying, holding, and selling investment products, that money may not take them to where they want to go. So I need a plan, I said, and my plan will then determine the different types of investment vehicles I will need. Rich Dad nodded, saying, in fact, don't invest until you have a plan. Always remember that investing is a plan, not a product or procedure. That is a very important lesson. Mental attitude quiz. Before a person builds a house, he or she usually calls in an architect to draw up the plans. Could you imagine what could happen if someone just called in some people and began to build a house without a plan? Well, that is what happens to many people's financial houses. Rich Dad guided me in writing out financial plans. It was not necessarily an easy process, nor did it make sense at first. But after a while, I became very clear on where I was financially and where I wanted to go. Once I knew that, the planning process became easier. In other words, for me, the hardest part was figuring out what I wanted. The mental attitude questions are 1. Are you willing to invest the time to find out where you are financially today and where you want to be financially? And are you willing to spell out how you plan to get there? In addition, always remember that a plan is not really a plan until it is in writing and you can show it to someone else. 2. Are you willing to meet with at least one financial professional and find out how his or her services may help you with your long-term investment plans? You may want to meet with 2 or 3 professionals just to find out the differences in their approaches. Chapter 7. Investor Lesson Number 7. Are you planning to be rich or are you planning to be poor? Most people are planning to be poor, said Rich Dad. What? I replied in disbelief. Why do you say that? How can you say that? Just listen to what people say, said Rich Dad. If you want to see a person's past, present, and future, just listen to his or her words. The Power of Words. Rich Dad's lesson on the power of words was very powerful. He asked, have you ever heard someone say, it takes money to make money? Standing to get 2 soft drinks from the refrigerator, I replied, yes, I hear it all the time. Why do you ask? Because the idea that it takes money to make money is one of the worst ideas there is, especially if a person wants more money, said Rich Dad. Handing Rich Dad his soft drink, I said, I don't understand. You mean it doesn't take money to make money? No, said Rich Dad, shaking his head. It does not take money to make money. It takes something available to all of us and is a lot less expensive to obtain than money. In fact, in many cases, what it takes is free. That statement made me very curious, but he would not tell me what it was. Instead, as the lesson on investing ended, he gave me an assignment. Before we meet again, I want you to invite your dad out to dinner, a long, slow dinner. All through the dinner, I want you to pay careful attention to the specific words he uses. After you hear his words, begin to pay attention to the message his words are sending. By this time, I was accustomed to Rich Dad giving me strange assignments, assignments that seemed unrelated to the subject we were discussing or studying. Yet, he was a firm believer in experience first and lesson second. So I called my dad and set up a date for dinner at his favorite restaurant. About a week later, Rich Dad and I met again. "How was dinner?" he asked. "Interesting," I replied. I listened very carefully to his choice of words, the meaning of the words, and the thoughts behind the words. "And what did you hear?" "I heard, 'I'll never be rich,'" I said. "But I've heard that most of my life. In fact, he often said to the family, 'The moment I decided to become a school teacher, I knew I'd never be rich.'" "So you've heard some of the same lines before?" inquired Rich Dad. I nodded, saying, "Many times, over and over again." "What else have you heard repeatedly?" asked Rich Dad. "Do you think money grows on trees? Do you think I'm made of money? The rich don't care about people like I do. Money is hard to get, and I'd rather be happy than be rich," I replied. "Now do you know what I mean when I say you can see people's past, present, and future by listening to their words?" asked Rich Dad. Nodding, I said, "And I noticed something else." "And what was that?" asked Rich Dad. "You have the vocabulary of a businessman and an investor. My dad has the vocabulary of a school teacher. You use words such as capitalization rates, financial leverage, EBIT, producer price index, profits, and cash flow. He uses words such as test scores, grants, grammar, literature, government appropriations, and tenure." Rich Dad smiled as he said, "It does not take money to make money. It takes words. The difference between a rich person and a poor person is the person's vocabulary. All a person needs to do to become richer is to increase his or her financial vocabulary. And the best news is that most words are free." During the 1980s, I spent much time teaching entrepreneurship and investing and became acutely aware of people's vocabulary and how their words related to their financial well-being. I did some research and found out that there are approximately 1 million words in the English language. The average person has command of only a few thousand words. If people want to begin increasing their financial success, it begins with increasing their vocabulary in a certain subject. For example, when I was investing in small real estate deals such as single-family rental properties, my vocabulary increased in that subject area. When I shifted to investing in private companies, my vocabulary had to increase before I felt comfortable investing in such companies. In school, lawyers learn the vocabulary of law, medical doctors learn the vocabulary of medicine, and teachers learn the vocabulary of teachers. If a person leaves school without learning the vocabulary of investing, finance, money, accounting, corporate law, and taxation, it is difficult to feel comfortable as an investor. One reason I created the cash flow board game was to familiarize non-investors with the vocabulary of investing. In all our games, players quickly learn the relationships behind the words of accounting, business, and investing. By repeatedly playing the games, the players learn the true definition of such misused words as asset and liability. Rich Dad often said, "More than not knowing the definitions of words, using the wrong definition of a word is what really causes long-term financial problems." Nothing is more destructive to a person's financial stability than to call a liability an asset. That is why he was a stickler for the definition of financial words. He taught me that the word mortgage comes from mortier, which is French for death. So a mortgage is an engagement until death. And that is why Rich Dad would often say, "It does not take money to make money. It takes a rich person's vocabulary to make money, and more importantly, to keep money. As you listen to this audiobook, please be aware of the different words that may be used. And always remember that one of the fundamental differences between a rich person and a poor person is his or her words. And words are free. Planning to be poor. After this lesson with Rich Dad, by simply listening to others' words, I began to notice why most people are unconsciously planning to be poor. Today, I often hear people say, "When I retire, my income will go down." And it does. They also often say, "My needs will go down after I retire, so that is why I will need less income." But what they often fail to realize is that while some expenses do go down, other expenses go up. And often these expenses, such as full-time nursing home care when they are very old, if they are lucky enough to become very old, are large. An average nursing home for the elderly can cost more than many people's monthly incomes today. Other people say, "I don't need a plan. I have a retirement and medical plan from my work." The problem with such thinking is that there is more to an investment plan than simply investments and money. A financial plan is important before someone begins to invest because it needs to take into consideration many different financial needs. These needs include college education, retirement, medical costs, and long-term health care. Many of these often large and pressing needs can be provided for by investing in products other than stocks and bonds or real estate, such as insurance products and different investment vehicles. The future. I talk about money to help educate people to provide for their long-term financial well-being. Ever since the advent of information age retirement plans, which are 401ks in America, superannuation plans in Australia, and registered retirement savings plans, RRSP, in Canada, I have grown concerned about the people who are not prepared for the information age. At least in the industrial age, a company and the government did provide some financial aid for a person after his or her working days were over. Today, when a person's 401k or cash balance retirement plan, which isn't a traditional pension, is drained dry, it will be the individual's problem, not the company's. It is imperative that our schools begin to teach young people to invest for their long-term health and financial well-being. If we do not, we will have a massive socioeconomic time bomb on our hands. I often say to my classes, be sure you have a plan. First, ask yourself if you are planning to be rich or if you are planning to be poor. If you are planning to be poor, the older you get, the more difficult you will find the financial world. Rich Dad said to me many years ago, "The problem with being young is that you don't know what it feels like to be old. If you knew what being old felt like, you would plan your financial life differently." Planning for being old. It is important to plan as early in life as possible. When I say this to my classes, most of my students nod in agreement. No one disagrees on the importance of planning. The problem is that very few people actually do it. Realizing that most people agreed that they needed to write a financial plan, but that few were going to actually take the time to do it, I decided to do something about it. About an hour before lunch in one of these classes, I found a cotton clothesline and cut it into different lengths. I asked the students to take one piece of line and tie each end around one of their ankles, much like one would hobble a horse. With their ankles tied about a foot apart, I gave them another piece of the line and had them loop it around their neck and tie it back down at their ankles. The overall result was that they were hobbled at the ankles, and instead of standing erect, they stooped over at about a 45-degree angle. One of the students asked if this was a new form of torture. "No," I replied, "I'm just taking each of you into the future, if you are lucky to live so long." The ropes now represent what old age could feel like. A slow moan came from the class. A few were getting the picture. The hotel staff then brought in lunch on long tables. The lunch consisted of sandwiches, salads, and beverages. The problem was that the cold cuts were simply stacked, the bread was not sliced, the salad was not made, and the beverages were the dry mix type that had to be combined with water. The students, now stooped and aged, had to prepare their own lunch. For the next 2 hours, they struggled to slice their bread, stack their sandwiches, make their salads, mix their drinks, sit, eat, and clean up. Naturally, Manny also needed to go to the restroom during the 2 hours. When the 2 hours were up, I asked them if they wanted to take a few minutes to write out a financial plan for their life. The answer was an enthusiastic yes. It was interesting to observe them actively taking an interest in what they planned to do once the ropes came off. Their interest in planning had increased dramatically once their point of view on life had been changed. As Rich Dad said, the problem with being young is that you don't know what it feels like to be old. If you knew what being old felt like, you would plan your financial life differently. He also said, the problem with many people is that they plan only up to retirement. Planning up to retirement is not enough. You need to plan far beyond retirement. In fact, if you're rich, you should plan for at least 3 generations beyond you. If you don't, the money could be gone soon after you're gone. Besides, if you don't have a plan for your money before you depart from this earth, the government does. Mental attitude quiz. We frequently do not pay close attention to our silent and seemingly unimportant thoughts. Rich Dad said, it's not what we say out loud that determines our lives. It's what we whisper to ourselves that has the most power. So the mental attitude questions are, 1. Are you planning to be rich or are you planning to be poor? 2. Are you willing to pay more attention to your deep, often silent thoughts? 3. Are you willing to invest time to increase your financial vocabulary? Your first goal could be to learn one new financial word a week. Simply find a financial word, look it up in the dictionary, find more than one definition for the word, and make a mental note to use the word in a sentence that week. Rich Dad was a stickler for words. He often said, words form thoughts, thoughts form realities, and realities become life. The primary difference between a rich person and a poor person is the words he or she uses. If you want to change a person's external reality, you need to first change that person's internal reality. That is done through changing, improving, or updating the words he or she uses. If you want to change people's lives, first change their words. The good news is that words are free. Chapter 8, Investor Lesson Number 8, Getting Rich is Automatic if you have a good plan and stick to it. My friend Tom is an excellent stockbroker. He often says, the sad thing is that 9 out of 10 investors do not make money. Tom explains that while 9 out of 10 investors may not lose money, they still fail to make money. Rich Dad said a similar thing to me. Most people who consider themselves investors make money one day and then give it back a week later. Even though they do not lose money, they simply fail to make money. Yet they consider themselves investors. Years ago, Rich Dad explained to me that much of what people think is investing is really the Hollywood version of investing. The average person often has mental images of floor traders shouting buy-sell orders at the start of the trading day, or images of tycoons making millions of dollars in a single trade, or images of stock prices plummeting and investors diving out of tall office buildings. To Rich Dad, that was not investing. I remember watching a program where Warren Buffett was being interviewed. During the course of the interview, I heard him say, the only reason I go to the market is to see if someone is about to do something silly. Buffett went on to explain that he did not watch the pundits on TV or watch the ups and downs of share prices to gain his investing advice. In fact, his investing was actually done far away from all the noise and promotion of stock promoters and people who make money from so-called investment news. Investing is not what most people think. Years ago, Rich Dad explained to me that investing is not what most people think it is. He said, "Many people think investing is this exciting process where there is a lot of drama. Many people think investing involves a lot of risk, luck, timing, and hot tips. Some realize they know little about this mysterious subject of investing, so they entrust their faith and money to someone they hope knows more than they do. Many other so-called investors want to prove they know more than other people, so they invest, hoping to prove that they can outsmart the market. But while many people think this is investing, that is not what investing means to me. To me, investing is a plan, often a dull, boring, and almost mechanical process of getting rich." When I heard Rich Dad make that statement, I repeated it back to him several times. Investing is a plan, often a dull, boring, and almost mechanical process of getting rich? I asked. What do you mean by a dull, boring, and almost mechanical process of getting rich? That is exactly what I said and what I mean, said Rich Dad. Investing is simply a plan, made up of formulas and strategies, a system for getting rich, almost guaranteed. A plan that guarantees that you get rich? I asked. I said, almost guarantees, repeated Rich Dad. There is always some risk. You mean investing doesn't have to be risky, dangerous, and exciting? I asked hesitantly. That's correct, Rich Dad answered. Unless, of course, you want it to be that way, or you think that is the way investing has to be. But for me, investing is as simple and boring as following a recipe to bake bread. Personally, I hate risk. I just want to be rich. So I'll simply follow the plan, the recipe, or the formula. That is all investing is to me. So, if investing is simply a matter of following a recipe, then how come so many people don't follow the same formula? I asked. I don't know, said Rich Dad. I've often asked myself the same question. I've also wondered why only 3 out of every 100 Americans is rich. How can so few people become rich in a country that was founded on the idea that each of us has the opportunity to become rich? I wanted to be rich. I had no money. So to me, it was just common sense to find a plan or recipe to be rich and follow it. Why try to make up your own plan when someone else has already shown you the way? I don't know, I said. I guess I did not know that it was a recipe. Rich Dad continued, I now realize why it is so hard for most people to follow a simple plan. And why is that? I asked. Because following a simple plan to become rich is boring, said Rich Dad. Human beings are quickly bored and want to find something more exciting and amusing. That is why only 3 out of 100 people become rich. They start following a plan, and soon they are bored. So they stop following the plan, and then they look for a magic way to get rich quick. They repeat the process of boredom, amusement, and boredom again for the rest of their lives. That is why they do not get rich. They cannot stand the boredom of following a simple, uncomplicated plan to get rich. Most people think there is some magic to getting rich through investing, or they think that if it is not complicated, it cannot be a good plan. Trust me, when it comes to investing, simple is better than complex. And where did you find your formula? I asked. Playing Monopoly, said Rich Dad. Most of us have played Monopoly as children. The difference is that I did not stop playing the game once I grew up. Do you remember that years ago I would spend many hours playing Monopoly with you and Mike? I nodded. And do you remember the formula for tremendous wealth that this simple game teaches? Again, I nodded. And what is that simple formula and strategy? Asked Rich Dad. Buy 4 greenhouses, then exchange the 4 greenhouses for a red hotel, I said quietly as my childhood memories came rushing back. You told us over and over again, while you were poor and just starting out, that playing Monopoly in real life was what you were doing. And I did, said Rich Dad. Do you remember when I took you to see my greenhouses and red hotels in real life? I do, I replied. I remember how impressed I was that you actually played the game in real life. I was only 12 years old, but I knew that for you, Monopoly was more than a game. I just didn't realize that this simple game was teaching you a strategy, a recipe, or a formula to become rich. I did not see it that way. Rich Dad then said, Once I learned the formula, the process of buying four greenhouses and then exchanging them for one red hotel, the formula became automatic. I could do it in my sleep, and many times it seemed like I did. I did it automatically without much thinking. I just followed the plan for 10 years, and one day I woke up and realized I was rich. Was that the only part of your plan? I asked. No, it wasn't. But that strategy was one of the simple formulas I followed. To me, if the formula is complex, it is not worth following. If you can't do it automatically after you learn it, you shouldn't follow it. That is how automatic investing and getting rich is, as long as you have a simple strategy and follow it. A great book for people who think investing is difficult. In my investment classes, there is always a cynic or doubter of the idea that investing is a simple and boring process of following a plan. This type of person always wants more facts, more data, and more proof from smart people. Since I am not a technical specialist, I did not have the scholarly proof that these types of individuals demand. That is, until I read a great book on investing. James P. O'Shaughnessy wrote the perfect book for people who think that investing has to be risky, complex, and dangerous. It is also the perfect book for those who think that they can outsmart the market. This book has the academic and numerical proof that a passive or mechanical system of investing will, in most cases,